Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder, pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here are your hosts, the one and only Dr. Payray and the millennial dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
All right. Welcome back to Millennial Dentist Podcast. I'm pretty stoked because this is my third time getting to record in this room, which is nice, and having a setup here. I tell you what I'm frustrated with a little bit is that I think we need to get some sound panels in here. I think we need some sound panels. I think it sounds a little, and I can't figure out this thing. Anyways, I'm multitasking. I'm trying to put up our banner in the podcast studio, and we got to do some changes. But anyways, I'm very excited. We're hoping to do more recordings, obviously, and more releases. And I want to do more episodes like today's episode. Today's episode is going to be an exciting one, in my opinion. We got Dr. Jackson Hall, who is one of the new doctors who just joined us. So Dr. Jackson, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you.
First time podcaster, long time listener?
That's right.
I love that. That's great. So Jackson's been here for, 2 months now? Really?
Officially
2 months, on and off for longer than that, in our practice. And there's a ton of things that I think would be great content and great episodes to talk about. And one thing the way this episode had come about was Jackson and I were downstairs in our office and we were talking about just random stuff. And I was like, okay, this is good. This is good content. We need to just basically record this and ask questions and do that thing. And so ultimately, because really that's how the podcast started, right? I mean, this was, early on, we would have the same questions that Jackson, that we just discussed earlier and that we're going to discuss today. And so we would go ask people and I was like, we should record this because this is good content that all of our colleagues have. So anyways, super pumped to have you on the show. Let's just dive right in for the sake of time. Because I definitely want to do this more. Again, I want to do this more often where we've got in between patient breaks and stuff.
Okay. So the first question, back up.
Obviously, introduce yourself first for a second
here. So I'm Dr. Jackson Hall. I graduated from UT in Memphis. I'm from Middle Tennessee. I've been hanging out here and watching you and learning from you over the past couple of years until I graduated. I feel like I've been listening to the podcast and so much great content and kind of steered me. And the big thing I've had, which is what you ran into, was just you're trying to go as fast as you can while, not making any missteps and trying to advance your clinical dentistry, but also keep the rest of your life in check and up as to where you are with that. So that's where this kind of started. Was I was kind of asking you about, hey, what is a new associate or owner, for that instance, do when you're starting from a financial standpoint? Because we all know, hey, that everyone talks about taxes and, the benefits of being a dentist, how to use those benefits, whether you're associate or versus owner and what the difference is in there. And obviously at school, we kind of get told that there's all this great stuff. And then right when you think, okay, what is it? No one says a word. And then you're ushered out the door, you're handed a diploma, and you're told you can go do dentistry, but you have essentially no business or tax knowledge. So that's where this started. And I was, every time I do something, I feel like you've already done it, or have at least investigated it to the point that
yes, that's fair, right? Like, screwed up enough to figure it out and wanted to, know how to do it, I guess. That sort of thing. So you said, so the first question you said was, which kind of brought this up, was, hey, who's your CPA? And my blessing and or curse is when someone asks me like who my CPA is, my immediate gut reaction is what's your question? Like, right? Like why? And I told you, I said, hey, this is who they are, but then I wanted to know more, right? I was like, okay, why are you interested in this information? Because to me, that's what's the goal behind it is important in the nature of figuring, getting to the point of what we're doing. So you said, so then follow up your answer on that.
So yeah, I asked you, hey, who's a good CPA? Where do I start with this? At this point, me and my wife both work. And so we're starting to set savings aside and we have a nice little nest egg going for our account, but it's just sitting there and it's kind of like, okay, so that's the first step. What do I do from here?
Yes. So to preface the situation, you know, that's important. So my thing is I think accountant's really, really important. The accountant, in my opinion, is really the first person we should order. And the reason why is because taxes ultimately are the biggest expense that we as dentists will ever have. Now, that is less leverageable when you're an associate versus when you're a dentist. So I will tell you that the largest checks that I've written in my life, bigger than anything else, have been tax checks. So nothing fun, not cars, you know, my mortgage is less expensive. It's tax checks. And so, yes, everything on some level is how can I not cheat taxes, but how can I mitigate taxes and how can I plan for taxes in a way that I am maximizing what I'm doing to minimize the amount of tax burden that I have. So in my opinion, an accountant should be the first person that we really should look into. Now, you followed up that question with, which I'm totally cool with talking about on air, another comment in regards to my dad. Tell us that one.
So I was looking for a company to, or at least where to start on trying to get something in addition to taxes, but wealth management.
Because that to me is, I think, what the core of this conversation comes down to is people like, hey, I'm finally getting out of survival mode. I've got some money saved up. You know, let's assume that you're making your loan payments, you're making your mortgage payments, your car payments, your credit card bills paid off. Like there's a level that gets you to the table to me. You're out of, because first off, I'm totally cool with that. So first off, I think the number one thing, Jackson, that we have to mention is that before we do any sort of wealth management, tax planning, retirement income, real estate investments, all that stuff, we have to have a base level of credit cards are paid off, mortgages are getting paid, my student loans are being paid, et cetera. Now, once we say, okay, all that's taken care of, now it's what do I do with the extra money? Because that's really what the question is, hey, I've got extra money piling up. What do I do with it? Now, now to get into that conversation, there's something we have to kind of address with everybody. And that is, what is your risk tolerance? And I'm going to ask you that specifically, but I want to speak to it globally for a minute. And that's, we all have the opportunity to leverage our risk. And what I mean by that is essentially whether we pay down debt or we invest in something is all about an interest game. Okay. So for instance, I'm not a huge believer in paying off student loans early. Now, that's a personal preference and a personal risk tolerance, but I'm also the same guy who won't pay their house off early. So like I want a 30-year fixed mortgage and I'm going to ride that thing for 30 years because I want the cash flow. Now that's also because interest rates right now, you know, I mean, my house is like 3% interest. So that's pretty cheap money. So for me to take excess money and pay that off, I'm not really getting a good ROI on that because I'm only getting 3% of my dollar. Does that make sense? So if I can invest that money and over the long term get 6 or 7%, well, now I'm doubling the return significantly on that standpoint. And my other reason in this is when we look at investing money and saving for retirement, you know, when you look at what that involves, it's compounding interest. What are the different factors that affect compounding interest? Time. Boom. Thank you. The number one most important one. And what can we not get back? Exactly. So my thing is like, every year you don't invest in your retirement or your long-term investment, you can't get that money. You can't get that back because it's time. And if you say, well, I'll just pay more later, you'll pay a ton more later. And I have some cool graphs that I found over the years that kind of talk about that. Like person A starts investing at 25 and then they stop investing at 35 and that money accumulates. And then person B starts at 35 and they invest like the rest of their career to like 60, and they still don't have as much money as the one that did it just for the 10 years because time is such a huge component. So yes, so we've set the stage now that time's important, investing early, and we have excess income. Now, where do I go with it? You mentioned and you said, okay, I'd like to get a financial advisor or some financial wealth management to help me start to partition where my money goes.
Right.
So I think that's a reasonable thing.
Yeah. So, and then my question is, you know, so then you know you want to start with something, and that was I know about compounding interest, you know, at least the concept of it.
Correct. Yep.
we have our mortgage, we have no credit card debt. We, you know, we pay it off every month. And, to follow up, we ended up getting, we have an Amex and a Chase that we put everything on, get the points. And we've been following that, which you talked about in an earlier one. And it's been awesome because of what the benefits you can do with that are. Now we kind of look at a point of saying, okay, so we do have a house loan, things like that. I don't have any student debt. I was fortunate in that. But now, like I say, so we got a nest egg. So then it was like, well, should we start paying this off or should we, but you're right. So we have like 2.75 interest rate. So then the question is, you know, I've got this money and it's getting a 0.5% or something like that in a money market account at a bank. So, you know, I know that's not good, but where do I start? And so then I thought about, okay, do I look into one of these companies where I can get a CPA and the whole shebang all in one, like a Kane Waters? Or do you piecemeal it together, or do I just throw it all in an investment deal that I put together in real estate on my own and just kind of figure that out?
So let me ask you some questions. Because look, I'm very vocal about Kane Waters, and I have been talking about them and how I feel about them and whatnot. But I don't mind talking to them because I think Kane Waters is a great company for the right people. They're a terrible company for myself. So I have to preface things like that because just because they're not right for me doesn't mean they're not right for someone that's listening to this. How involved do you want to be in this process? How turnkey do you want it to be? What does that look like to you, Jackson?
So I think for me starting off, I want somebody who is going to work with me and help me learn more, do more, be involved. I don't want to do every single thing, but I also don't want to never know where my money's going, who's doing what with it, and it's something I find interesting. I enjoy. I would like to one day get into a real estate of some kind. So I want to have enough involvement to know what a good deal looks like or to know when something's not right.
I love that answer. And so my opinion is that should be everyone's answer on some level, meaning everybody should say, I want to understand and be able to appreciate where my shit's going. Okay. Cause what I don't like is where people sign up blindly to something and they have no idea what's going and they just trust somebody. And that to me is not wise. And the reason it's not wise is because we as dentists are like, you spent a lot of time and money and education to get where you're at and you're smart people. And so what I would like, I think the very first step is you've got to take some time to get some continuing education in basic financial planning, basic tax, basic stuff. Now, to me, the way you do that, that's just reading books. That's just, you know, The White Coat Investor it's a blog. It's also a book. That was an easy read. That was a great start for me. You know, there's, I think it's Poor Dad, Rich Dad. You want to get into investments, you can look at Bogle's got a book. I mean, there's a number of different books that I could recommend that to me, I think we should look at reading, you know, a book, two books a year, three books a year, or something of that nature, a book a quarter, if you will. Because to me, that's going to give you a foundational basic knowledge, and it's going to allow you to be able to have, because I think that one of the challenges we have is if you call Kane Waters right now, there's a good chance that like the conversations you would have would be over your head. And that's not because you're not smart by any means. It's just that like you haven't taken the time to learn about the difference between and I'm not saying you specifically, I'm just saying in general, what the difference between tax deferred accounts and tax advantage accounts are, or you know, how HSAs work, or how 529s work for kids, or like there's these different things that they're gonna start throwing out, and then you're like, well, gosh, I don't know. That's all confusing stuff, and it's really not that confusing. So I think step one is taking some time to have a basic understanding. Because if you tell me, look, I just want to farm it all out, I'm going to say that's totally fine. Just do me the favor and at least read some books so that you can have educated conversations. Because that's my pet peeve with people who don't know is that then you start talking to them about their financial planning or their plan, and they can't even really tell you exactly what's going on.
Right. So I've been following your podcast as well as other. And so I've read The White Coat Investor because you talked about it, and it was a great. I read that and Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And to me, those were kind of the fundamental of getting you in the mindset, or me in the mindset of saying, okay, there's more out there. I can make $1 million a year, but it's kind of worthless in the sense of like, if you're not doing anything with it.
Correct. Okay, so let's talk about where we put the money. Let's get like down to brass tacks here.
Right.
So to me, because I think that the reason why I don't think that a lot of people need financial planners is because where the money goes early is pretty easy. Okay, so step one is you pay down all your stuff that you need to get paid down. We're doing that. Step two is we need an emergency fund. Now, your emergency fund is, you know, they say 3 months. It's really you're getting your comfort level, but you need to have some level relative money somewhere in an account earning nothing, but that's an emergency fund. You know, because what happens if, you know, Royal gets sick and can't, you know, and then has to, you know, whatever the case is, and or you break your hand, you need to have some level of disability doesn't kick in typically for, you know, 90 days or something like that. So there needs to be some level of emergency fund. After that, to me, it's all about taking advantage of tax advantaged accounts. Circling back all the way to the beginning, tax is the number one thing that hurts us. We've got to be taking advantage of those things that can reduce our tax. Those type of accounts are going to be 401ks, SEP IRA, you know, things like a SEP IRA, simple IRA, or a 401k. Now, in your case, I'm assuming your wife has a 401k, and that number is probably $18,500 that she can put into that account per year.
Yeah. So we have a 401k, we have an HSA, which I'll learn about.
Which is also a tax advantage account,
right?
Because we get to write off the taxes.
Right.
So now we're at 18.5 plus we're at 87.50 for let's just call it 9 and let's call it 18 for my easy math. So that's 27,000. We're at $27,000 a year in tax advantage money. So that means if you make 100 grand, you get to take off 27 for those listing. And that means you're only taxed on 73,000. So that 27,000 that you put in those accounts, you're not paying tax on. That's a really, really important part of this because it's saving you money by investing that money. That's cool. So that right there is we're at 27,000. Now keep going. What else?
So that's all we have right now. That and just a savings account.
Perfect. And then, what I'm hearing now is, okay, we're doing the 27,000, but there's still money left over. That's amazing. So then we have to start out, okay, what can we do then in a non-taxed account?
Well, preface that. We haven't maxed out the HSA, or we are maxing out that, I think, but we're not maxing out 401k.
Perfect. So then you see why this gets easy to me, because until you can max that out, there's no reason to even consider hiring. Like, it doesn't get tricky for a while. So now we got 27,000, but wait, there's more. You know, I'm like a game show host. Okay, so then you got IRAs. Now, there's two types of IRAs. You got a normal IRA and you have a Roth IRA. Are you familiar with the difference? Okay, so just for our listeners' sake, a IRA is the tax advantage one, meaning that when you put the money in, $5,500 a year, $6,000 a year, whatever it is a year, you again get to take that money off your taxes. Now, we're going to call it $6,000. So let's call it for you and your wife, that's $12,000. So now we're at 12 plus 27. We're at $39,000 in money that we could be investing that's saving money on our taxes. So we are making money by saving that money. And that's $39,000. So again, now the question is, you know, are you doing all those? So if you're not doing those $39,000, then there's no reason to even, like, it's easy at this point, right? Like, that's not confusing because those are no-brainers to take care of. So until you get beyond that, then there's not like there's a ton to do. Because in my opinion, you shouldn't be investing in just random stocks and random real estate until you're taking the things that are literally saving you money no matter what they do.
Okay, so that's something we
and taxes.
We did do was we're putting some down in 401k and HSA. We did open up a E-Trade account over right when COVID hit, because like everyone in the world, we were bored and like, hey, what can we, and when we made some money off it, it was great. But now it's kind of like, wait, so.
Now you're to pay tax on the money you made.
Yeah, well, and that's what we got hit with a bill and we were like, bad news bears, you know?
To me, I'm cool with having I'm very cool because I have it too. I've got a TD Ameritrade account. I'm very okay with having fun money set aside that is not part of your retirement plan after you've taken advantage of the tax advantage accounts.
So you would say first things first, max out tax advantage accounts before you try and delve into the other
100%. Because again, let's say y'all are making I'm just throwing out numbers. Let's say you're making $250,000 as a couple. And let's say that you're putting, you start doing all these things, and now you're putting it, you get to the point where you're investing basically $40,000 a year. So that's taking your tax burden from a gross tax burden of 250 to now you're at 210. So if your tax bracket, I'm just again messing here, is 25% for easy math, and it's 25% of 40 grand, that just saved you $5,000 in taxes by investing that money, which will make you money. And you can't get the time back, right? Because that's the other part of this. 401ks, what's the first thing we said? They're capped, 18.5 a year. So that doesn't mean that in a couple of years when you're rolling in it, you can't make up for, you can't put 100 grand in it. You can only put 18.5. So that's what screws you, is that you can, whereas if you go to the E-Trade account, you could always put tons of more money in there. There's no limit. There's no cap. So in my opinion, you got to take advantage of the tax advantage accounts, which are HSA, 401k, and IRAs, or simple, or SEP if you're a solo business owner and you have those that, a simple and a SEP would be, are different variations of a 401k basically.
Okay. So if you're someone like me and you say, okay, so I know we do this. So my wife works for a big corporation here in Middle Tennessee, Nissan.
And she probably gets a match or something like that too.
Yeah, they do up to a point, which is great. But let's say that you're a new associate, and I'm doing this not for me, but you know, anyone listening.
Yes, correct.
They say, okay, I want to do that. Where do they go to say, hey, I want to start a 401k?
You can't. So here's what sucks, right? So this is, so the 401ks are ran by businesses. Most businesses exclude, most dental offices exclude doctors in the 401k. Meaning in our practice, you and Megan can't participate in our 401k. I think. I need to double check that. But yeah, I'm pretty sure you can't. Most of them have it set up because it's not necessarily, because a lot of these 401ks have these other little pieces to it, mm-hmm. profit sharing, defined benefits, yeah. some of these terms you may have heard of. And they require us to put money in for the employees. And so most of these plans are written to exclude high income earners, which would be the associate doctors. So you're kind of screwed as an associate, because one, you're a W-2 employee, so that you have less ability to write things off for, you know, through the practice. And two, you don't have a way to contribute to retirement plans outside of HSA and an IRA.
Okay.
Which is pretty limiting.
So then if you're a new associate, I mean, so who do you talk to about that then? Or are you kind of SOL as far as the 401k?
You're SOL on the 401k.
There. Okay.
But remember, most solo associates also don't necessarily have the excess income to go and do that to begin with, right? If you're a solo associate right out of school with 400 grand in student loan debt, you're just doing everything you can to make your payments for your loans, your mortgage, your car, et cetera. There's not like, then if you do the HSA, then you do an IRA, there's not like there's a ton of gravy on top. You know, you're similar to me. Both spouses work, which is good. So before, when I was an employee or an associate, we just maxed out everything on Caroline's side and then maxed out both our IRAs. So that's 6 grand, that's 12 grand, that's 18.5, it's 27 plus the HSA is another 9. That's 36, 37. So we were putting away $36,000, $37,000 in retirement. And the rest we were just saving because we knew that we wanted, you know, whatever it is. So yes, at some point it makes sense to either, here's where you could get creative on that, Jackson. So you can also create other businesses. So like my wife now has her own simple IRA with her consulting business that she started so that she could have an additional area to shuck away money. So everybody can have a 401k and they can have multiple jobs. They can only just have one 401k, if that makes sense. So if you had a side hustle business, whatever it was, it could be like selling shit on eBay. I don't know, mowing grass. You could create your own 401k. There's ways to create and that's where an accountant can be helpful, because an accountant can say, hey, Jackson, we noticed you made some money doing, you know, let's say moonlighting on the side. You should create your own little company so that you can then potentially shuck money away there.
So with that, the 401k and the IRA and all that, my understanding is that no matter how many different accounts or businesses or whatever you have, there's a max cap per human being.
Right. It's 18.5 for a 401k.
Okay.
Now that is different. And when you get into like how you're like a solo 401k, how your business is set up, because for me as the business owner, I can put in 54,000. So now all of a sudden you look at where I'm at and I've got 54,000 in my 401k at the office, 18.5 in Caroline's. Now we're at 54 plus 18 is 72 plus the HSA. That's 9. Now we're at 79 plus our two IRAs. That's 12. Now we're at 93 plus now she's got her side simple, whatever. That's another 18. So next thing you know, it's like, that's $100,000+ that you could be putting away a year. And I haven't even had to get creative.
Okay.
So I've gotten a little creative, but I haven't like, it's not like this took rocket science from some financial planner or some investment strategy to
right
to do it.
So let's say you're starting here and you say, okay, we're good here. So then, you know, another thing is I understand how a 401k and an IRA work in a vacuum. So let's say that you've got now, let's say $1 million just for round figure purposes in your 401k. Mm-hmm. Now, how is that being invested? Who has say in that?
Great question. So companies like your wife's or like our employees here, that there's typically a, 20 or so investments that cover a range of compliance. I couldn't have like just 20 airline stocks. That would not be compliant with like the way the government sets it up. And you get to pick from those stocks.
Okay. So you as the business owner
get to pick the 20, and then the employees like your wife, she has to pick one of those or some of those that your company offers to invest in. Same thing with your IRA. An IRA is typically housed at a Vanguard, a Fidelity, something like that. And you as the owner of that IRA get to pick where the money is invested. So an IRA, you can invest in more, depending on where it's at, you can invest in more risky things and whatnot. But now let's talk about that. So then the question is, okay, now I know where to invest them. What should I invest them in? I will always say that I am a big, because this is where my other debate with someone like a Kang Waters is. Most financial advisors are going to take a more active investing role. And what I mean by that is active investing versus passive investing is active means that they are on some level trying to beat the market. They are trying to move money, invest money, pick stocks, pick funds, etc. That's going to give a good return versus just riding the wave of passively investing them into the market and letting the market bring them up.
Right. So with that, let's say that is there restrictions on saying, okay, you know what? Like during the pandemic, right? Boeing went way down, and everybody, anyone who was ballsy enough to jump on that
made a lot of money.
But then you say, okay, I made that overnight. Can you sell it immediately? Move on to something else, or is there some sort of?
Well, yeah. So by definition, what you just said, that's active investing. So I got some money in Boeing. I got some money in some fun things. I am a believer that it is fun to invest money into active style. I'm not a believer in doing my retirement money with that. And here's why. You're 35. Let's say you want to retire. Let's just from standard, you want to retire at 60. Okay. That's 25 years. That you don't need to be risky. You've got so much time that just by investing the number at like a 4% return, you're going to have more money than you know what to do with. Your upside of being risky is there's not that big of a benefit for the downside of doing it. Because let's say that you did invest all your retirement in Boeing. And let's say Boeing didn't get bailed out, Boeing literally got bought and that company was gone. I mean, like Blockbuster, Circuit City. Like these were companies that were super, they were like number 1, 2, 3 in the S&P 500 back in the 80s, 90s, whenever, and now they're gone. So at some point, everything falls, like Rome will fall, right? And so the Apples, the Amazons, the Facebooks, Facebook, as crazy as it sounds, what a huge company. I mean, they could be one crazy story of privacy and all that, so much going on. Next thing you know, the government like just shuts them down. And that stock goes, you know, so you just never know. So my point is that it's fun to catch downsides, and you know, COVID happened, and you know, there was definitely stocks for sale and you could make some money, but there's a lot of people who lost a lot of money, you know, who they saw Boeing and then they rode it up. Then it rode up, then they bought it. Next thing you know, it tanked again for a little while and they sold, and so I tend to take a much more passive approach, and that the market always goes up. And there's a number of kind of, you know, Warren Buffett's a big talks about this, but at the end of the day, my thing is if the market doesn't go up, we're all screwed. So that means that over time, the average interest rate of the market will be great. So at minimum, something like the S&P 500 is a great thing to invest in.
So
that's just the top 500 companies in the US.
Okay.
That's Walmart, McDonald's, Apple, Facebook, Amazon. You're investing in all those companies by investing in that fund.
Right.
But the good thing is your risk is mitigated because the number will never go to zero.
Right. Like if one falls,
it gets replaced with another one.
Right. Okay.
So to me, but you know that as a whole, that percentage will always go up over time.
Right. And then if it doesn't, we're all in it together.
Right. If we're done it, we're screwed.
Yeah.
You know, and you can literally, there's a fund that's the total world market that you could literally just invest in the market. Like you own some little piece of everything.
So can that be in a 401k? Because we talk about like, let's say 20. Okay. So you could put a fund in there if you're
running the. Okay. So most 401ks, like our 401k, for example, is going to be, it's going to have like an S&P 500. It's going to have like a top 200. It's going to have like a small cap stocks, which is going to be the top 200 small companies. You know, it's going to have like a technology companies, but they're funds. They're not necessarily they're not companies.
Okay. Any penny stocks in there just for funsies?
No penny stocks in there.
You got to ask.
So to me, like, again, if you keep it simple, the need for someone like a King Waters, in my opinion, isn't very, you don't need it. Now, because the thing is you have to say, okay, what's it cost to use something like that? I mean, it's not uncommon for these companies to charge you, you know, 8 to 10 grand a year. And on top of that, they're charging you some percentage of assets under management. Now, what that means is that if you've got $20,000 invested with them, you're paying them, you know, 1% or 1.5% of that number every year as it grows. And then the money they make and et cetera. And so if you're like, I just don't have any interest whatsoever, my advice to you is to always look for a fee-only financial advisor. Now, there are a lot of people who advertise themselves that way, but they are more fee-based.
Okay. Can you explain the difference?
Yes. So fee-only is completely transactional. Jackson, I'm your financial planner. You're going to pay me $500 a month.
Okay.
All I'm giving you is just advice.
Okay. So like a stock advisor, whatever, just you pay
literally,
them whatever.
Literally you pay them a flat fee and you ask questions. I give advice like, hey, should I invest in the stock? No, take it or leave it. Yes, take it or leave it, et cetera. It's just literally someone who's advising you with no, there's no incentive for them to give you bad advice because they're literally just paid a flat fee. Fee based means that you're going to have a flat fee like that. You're going to have a retainer, $500 a month, something like that. But then there's going to be strings attached. Now, if I'm investing your money, I'm going to make 0.5% on your investments.
Per transaction or per, like in the sense of if you never, you throw it in Boeing or whatever and it just goes to the moon, whatever.
It's like a yearly thing. It just takes that percentage of it, I think. That's how it works. And the other reason I don't like that is because in my opinion, then, they are incentivized to be more risky because now they're making money off your money and their downside is they lose you as a client, but their upside is they make a lot more money. Hence why that most of them are active investors because they're trying to, they have to prove value because if they were going to tell you to invest in the S&P 500 and you're paying them to tell you that, why would you keep using them?
Yeah. Well, so I mean, from a global view of this discussion, so basically, the thing to do really is max out your 401k, your HSA, and an IRA of some kind. And at that point, if you're maxing out all those, essentially, you're if you start young enough, like I'm 35, I'm not the youngest, but I'm not certainly not old either. Your retirement's all kind of but assured
on some level,
unless
yes.
unless everything hits the shitter, or
right, you know, and like, and even then, like it, yes, okay. When we're talking like everything hits the shitter, like yeah, I mean yeah,
like bad,
and the thing is that can be marginal. Like a lot of people now do target date retirement funds, which is another great idea. A ton of these companies have target date retirement fund, and what they do, Jackson, is they reallocate the stocks that you're invested in based off your age to retirement. So if you're 40 years from retirement, you will be in more risky, volatile stocks. If you're 2 years from retirement, you'll be almost in no growth.
Okay, but so, safe.
Safe, right. So they literally reallocate every year as you get closer. So what you could do is you can go in there and you can literally invest in a target date retirement fund for 2020 of 2045. And every year it will reallocate to be less risky as you get closer.
And is that something within a 401k?
Yeah, like we have those. Our employees can do that. So literally it's like turnkey for them. It's not even to think.
So that's what you say when you talk about like, okay, let's say that Sullivan Dental Partners 401k is made up of, let's say like 10, just 10 different things.
Five of those funds may be target date 2040, 2050, 2060, 2070.
Okay, I'm with you. So then, and that's where you, me, the private or the personal inside there saying, hey, I want to, here's all my $10,000 that I have in 401k, whatever. I can pick any one of these and they're all available to me. Moreover, I don't need a Kane Waters or somebody right now. This is just kind of, at this point, it's almost like taking free money and at least making sure that at the end of the day, when you hang up your spurs, you're not going to be out on the street.
Or find a financial guy who's willing to be a fee-only advisor where you say, hey, you know, my wife's at Nissan. She's got these, they've got 20 different funds they can choose from. I want to pay you to like help me figure out which one's the best for her. Because then you're paying for advice and like that's more knowledge than you know. And they may find, hey, actually, this fund's a pretty good one to use. You may get a little more upside than the target date retirement fund.
Okay. So then with all this, it would obviously for the tax benefit, the 401k and all the tax shelter things that you can get into is obviously a better deal on the front end. Moreover, you know, us sitting at home and reading Yahoo Finance every day is not going to match what somebody could do or what can really reasonably be expected then. So in the sense of
just confuses people right. when they do that.
So there's no reason essentially to go off down that path of E-Trade and all that until you're first maxing out your, which you like say is can be up to 100,000 a year, which at that point, if you're maxing that out, you're in pretty good way.
Here's an interesting comment. I've lost more money since I started reading more daily financial things than I did before when I knew less. I've lost more money now that I know more than I did when I knew less. And that's because I've now let me be clear. The money I'm losing is fun money. And when I fund my money, it's not my retirement stuff. It's me on TD Ameritrade or E-Trade or Schwab or whatever, being daily stockbroker and thinking, well, cruise lines are down right now, so I'm going to buy cruise lines. Like, it's like right now I got a lot of money in cruise lines, but it's just sitting there not doing anything. And I'm hoping it's going to come back up. Maybe it will, but that's taking up a lot of bandwidth of energy of my time that I should just have dumped it in the S&P 500, never looked at it again until like 10, 15 years. I would have made a lot of money and not been distracted and focused on what makes me money with money.
Right. And so with that, like, again, this is kind of getting into the details of a 401k or whatever. So let's say again that we bought Royal Caribbean too way back when. So let's say that within our 401k that's somehow an option or something like that.
Yeah.
And we say, hey, it went down last week. They thought they were going to fold and then we bought in, we jumped way up. Can you within the week go in and say, okay, sell that, move on to something else?
You could, but most retirement accounts don't have funds that, because of the compliance issues, they don't allow me to have funds in there that are that volatile.
Okay.
So you're not going to be able to, you don't gain anything by moving it that much.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So bigger movers, like, or, well, I say bigger companies.
Volatile would be the word to use. Yeah. The more volatile something is, the more risky it is, the more upside it has, the less likely it's going to be in a 401k at a company, because it's not going to fit within the compliance that we require to have.
Okay. So essentially everything in the 401k and all that is just, it's already passive.
Right.
In the sense of, yes, like, yeah, you paid, yes, enough to get into it, but now you're passive enough that you can go do more dentistry, learn more,
right,
increase your skill set, et cetera. And then at that point, if you ever are maxed out in your 401ks, your, you know, whether you have Roth IRA or whatever, your HSA, then, you know, at that point, if it's worth it, to go find something else to invest in, great, but at least you're already set on the basic level.
For people our age, there's just no reason to get crazy. You know, and like, I look at King Waters, I'm like, they were the best thing that ever happened to my dad. Best thing. And as much as I give them shit, they were the best thing that ever happened to him. Because you know what? He was late to the game. He didn't have time on his side, so he had to get creative. But for 90% of the people listening to this podcast, they've got so much time on their side that if they will just put the money away in the tax advantage accounts, and then they will, you know, put it in passive funds, then I would argue once you get to be fund money, on some level, you should be looking at something else to invest in anyways, aka real estate. Because if you've already got, if you're already putting 100 grand away in stock, in retirement stocks, why go put more and more stocks and pay more tax on that? I mean, you put money in like an E-Trade, TD Ameritrade account, Schwab account, and you're going to pay capital gains tax out the wazoo on that money you make. You know, right. So then you're almost better off like, okay, now, I'll use Caroline, my wife, example. Hey, Caroline, you know, now we've maxed out your retirement, my retirement, HSAs, Roth IRAs, whatever it is. Now we've got 100 grand saved up. Let's save up some more money and let's go buy a house that we want to do a rental or something. You know, maybe it's something like that. I don't know. But that, or, you know, you reinvest that back in your practice or whatever. There's lots of different ways you can do it. But yes, it shouldn't be crazy. The only thing I do want to mention that we didn't, that I feel like has to be covered somewhat on this topic, is we didn't mention Roth IRAs necessarily, or backdoor Roth IRAs. A lot of people use IRAs because they're the one that gets to write off the taxes. They're the tax advantage account. But this is probably a whole other podcast for another time or episode. But it's important that when you get to your retirement, you don't just have all your retirement invested into tax advantage accounts. Because when you go to use that money, you got to pay tax on that money, because you have to pay the taxes on the back end. And so if that's where you're getting all your money, then you got to borrow money. You got to take money from your 401k to pay the taxes on the money you already took. And then you got to take money to pay taxes on the money. Do you see the spiral that happens?
Yeah.
It's kind of called the tax spiral.
Yeah.
And so it's not ideal. So I'm a proponent of using Roth IRAs or backdoor Roth IRAs for those who can't directly fund into them because of their income level to create some investment, some retirement that is not tax deferred. So that when you take the money out in a Roth IRA, you don't pay taxes on it because you pay the tax on the front end.
Right. Okay.
Follow me?
Yeah.
So I would like to see people having a balance. It's probably in a balance of somewhere like a 70-30. 70% of their money is in tax deferred, kicking the can down the road. And then 30% of the money's in tax, not tax deferred, where we're paying the tax now.
Like a Roth,
so that I have money to pay the taxes on the money I take out later.
So, and then again, we could go on this topic and there's so much more. So like, I have a 3-year-old, you have a son too.
Yep. Oh, we'll talk about those later. Yeah.
Yeah. The other things are like, you know, cause you hear these things like, hey, if we could start throwing even just $50 a month, you know, into an account for him, some things like that.
And Hughes turns 3 and he's already got a Roth IRA.
See, that's okay. And that's I don't know what the limitations are. I don't think we've all know that things are possible, but you don't really know until you know.
I think my accountant was the best person who got me on starting a lot of this stuff.
Right. So I think
an accountant's where you start.
Okay.
Then I think you need to read some books. Then I think you need to make sure you're taking advantage of the tax advantage accounts, which is the main three are 401k, Roth IRA, and an HSA. And then outside of those, you do that, you're going to be pretty good.
All right. And when you get to that point, you need to have learned enough to start going in another direction.
Yeah, we'll do another. Yeah, that's episode two.
Okay. Okay.
All right, this is good. I got to go to my owner's meeting. Hey, if you liked this, which I thought this was fun, please, please reach out to us and let us know. I think it would be more fun to have more of these episodes like this, just a meal a day. I'm going to go eat lunch and go to a meeting. Work smarter, not harder.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.